Radio Netherlands, not national, but international, broadcasting direct from Northwest Europe. Media Network, the weekly communications magazine with Diana Janssen and Jonathan Marks.
Ah, there you are. Once again, a warm welcome to the show. Sit back and relax as we take you on the tour of the present. But first, a date for your diary. On the last programme in 1995, we'll be doing a feature on the British across the border. The intriguing story of how Britain reacted to Rhodesia's unilateral declaration of independence back in 1965. There have been some recent stories published about how a transmitter was set up in a matter of weeks in what is now Botswana. And we found the people responsible. You can hear the results of that research on December the 28th.
Most of Europe went back to winter time at the end of September. The UK and Ireland, however, will return to winter time this Sunday, October 22nd. I note from the trade journal, the radio magazine, that the import of radio-controlled studio clocks into Britain caused some problems on September 24th. Unlike many of the British-made radio clocks, which monitor the pulses put out by a transmitter in Rugby on 60 kHz, the ones we use on this side of the North Sea monitor a clock at Mainflingen, near Frankfurt in Germany, on 77.5 kHz. So disc jockeys in the UK were confused at 3 a.m. on Sunday, September 24th, when the clocks in the studio suddenly moved back an hour for no apparent reason. Next year the problem will be solved as summertime throughout Europe will start at the end of March and finish at the end of October. That means shortwave transmission schedules will do likewise.
Ah, summer for 7 months. I'm looking forward to it. At last, some harmonisation. That weekly trade journal, the radio magazine, has developed into a fascinating review of UK broadcasting, with a lot more detail than you'll find in the larger glossies. 52 issues costs £60 sterling in the UK, £80 in the rest of Europe, and £110 airmail anywhere else. So maybe it's beyond the hobbyist's budget. But Howard Rose, who edits the magazine, does produce a consistently interesting magazine for anyone who's somehow connected with the radio industry, maybe in a professional capacity. More information from the radio magazine, 25 High Street, Kettering, that's K-E-T-T-E-R-I-N-G, Northants, and the postal code is NN146AD in the UK. That's the radio magazine, 25 High Street, Kettering, Northants, NN146AD in the UK. The phone number is 44 for the UK, then 1536 418 558, and the fax number 44 for the UK, then 1536 418 539. Sample copies are free of charge.
If offshore broadcasting nostalgia is more your line, then Offshore Echoes magazine remains one of the best English language publications on the market. It appears 5 times a year, and the annual cost is £18 sterling. It's full of gossip with stars of the past, newspaper clippings, memorabilia exchanges, and lots of photos.
I love the sort of where they are now type features. It really is amazing how the legends live on and on and on, even though the programmes have long since disappeared from the ether. More information from Chris Edwards, and his address is P.O. Box 1514, London, W72LL. That's Chris Edwards, P.O. Box 1514, London, W72LL in the UK.
Kanwarjit Sandhu in India sent us a fax saying he's just resumed monitoring after a long absence. He notes that the external service of Radio Mogadishu in Somalia now says it is the voice of the Somali peace forces in its identification. And he notes an English program daily from 1830 to 1855 UTC on the Way Out of Band channel of 6710 kHz. He also notes that Transworld Radio has moved its European headquarters to another town in the Netherlands. Programs broadcast over Radio Tirana in Albania announce P.O. Box 176, postal code 3780, BD in Voorthuizen in the Netherlands. English is from 21:30 to 22:50 55 UTC on 1395 kHz.
Right, enough of those numbers, but we stay with medium wave and we play a bit of music.
My favourite music.
I guess it all started in 1960s with Radio Caroline and the listening to the wonderful sounds of the 1960s pop music. I moved on to Dutch Pirates in 1970s, listening to 227 metres.
It is an ode, and the piraten, heel hartelijk bedankt, ja nogmaals bedankt, piraten van Nederland. Heel hartelijk bedankt, ja nogmaals bedankt, piraten van Nederland.
Listening to famous Dutch pirates like Hawaii and Mr. Munro and Johnny Walker and Alibaba, etc. I decided to track all the pirates down, all the low-power pirates, and it sort of snowballed from there. I started the Dutch Pirate Radio Service in 1991.
Derek Taylor lives in Preston in the northwest of Britain. So, at first, you might think it rather strange that he runs what's called the Dutch Pirate Radio Service. We tracked him down to explain a bit more about those strange music stations that pop up at the high frequency end of the medium wave band. With the sunspot number so low, these local broadcasters are getting further than they think.
Basically, it's detective work, you know. I mean, a lot of the pirates are low power stations. They don't have a postbox, they don't wish to make their address known. It's surprising, if you get hold of one address and he has a pirate who lives in a nearby neighbourhood, it's possible to contact the second one and so forth, you know. It took me 5 years to get the service going, the QSL service, and we have 250 more addresses on the file at DPRS headquarters, you know.
But they're not on the air at the same time.
Oh, no, but at the moment, I guess there's about 100, 150 active that are heard internationally or at least in Europe, you know. Some of the pirates can use up to 2 kilowatts, but majority of them are local broadcasters. They play a Dutch, Nederlandstalig music, which is Dutch music, primarily for a local audience, and which is something in the past that Dutch national radio has not catered for, you know.
Radio Noordzee Nationaal got a commercial license in this country on the strength of its high Dutch music content, although that doesn't necessarily mean the sort of Dutch language music played by the rural pirates. Many Dutch artists sing in English in the hope of a breakthrough in other European markets. The pirates rebel against this trend each weekend.
It's mainly weekends, but they can be heard every night if you listen between 1634 kilohertz and 1660 kilohertz. At weekend, you get the big international broadcaster using 1 kilowatt and giving out a postbox and mainly broadcasting in English. And it's possible for those to be heard in the USA and Canada. But the little guys, the ones that use the 1 watt to 200 watts, they have been heard in Sweden and Norway and Finland and Scandinavian countries. And it's surprising how far a 1 watt signal can propagate.
Looking at this list, they seem to use a weird variety of names. Radio Black Panther, the Silver Lady, Radio Meteor, so the list goes on. But they all seem to be in the rural farming areas of this country.
We have names like the Vertolenwachter, which in English is lighthouse keeper, and Frolicke Mineworker, which is the happy miner. The names are endless. There must be about 500 or 600 names that they use, you know. If it's a case of just being a little bit wary of the authorities, they can use different names in 1 week. Sometimes they can use 3 different decoy names, you know. As far as I'm aware, there's only one pirate in Holland who is actually mobile, but the transmitters are fixed. But Holland is just the land of pirates, and I think always will be. It's just a phenomenon that's peculiar to Holland. I don't know why. It all started back in the 1920s, and of course, Holland was flooded with ex-army transmitters and things, and from France and the USA.
But Jonathan, don't the Dutch authorities do anything to reduce this activity? It's after all illegal.
Yes, it is illegal. The authorities there only appear to respond to interference complaints. The FM pirate scene's collapsed here compared to 10 years ago, mainly because commercial pirates and advertisers were prosecuted for tax evasion, and licenses were later handed out to several hundred people for local community broadcasting, which is what they wanted. That still leaves a group of people, though mainly living in the east and the southern part of Holland, who've made radio broadcasting a sort of hobby, and who go on the air to play mainly Dutch music for their friends in the neighbourhood. The stations are raided from time to time, but without a major police offensive, there's always going to be somebody around on the dial. Sometimes the prosecutions, though, are for other reasons. I remember a station called Radio Jan Raap near Nijmegen, which was raided because of a complaint by the electricity company. See, this guy had bought a giant 50-kilowatt military transmitter from a sort of fair in Eastern Europe, and goodness knows, transported the thing back home, lovingly restored it, and then connected it to a long wire antenna in the garden. The contraption, of course, had nothing to protect it from harmonic radiation, so as well as broadcasting on 1630 kilohertz, I think it was heard at many other parts of the dial as well. The guy loved folk music, but the transmitter, of course, took so much power from the mains that modulation started to cause peaks and troughs in the power supply, so that the neighbour, living 2 kilometres up the road, got all sorts of problems. The neighbour couldn't understand why every Saturday evening the lights started pulsating. The microwave oven in the kitchen did very strange and unpredictable things to the dinner, and the television had dancing bands of light across the picture. In the end, after a lot of investigation, they booked the illegal broadcaster for putting a nail in the fuse box and drawing an illegal amount of power from the mains without permission, even though he was prepared to pay for it all.
Lovely story. Back to Derek now, because it seems that Derek receives up to 2,000 letters a year, which he passes on to the radio operators concerned.
Oh, it's surprising we get anything from a couple of letters to anything from 10 or 15 to the DPRS headquarters daily. At the moment, it's just getting busy on 183 metres, and sometimes you get pirates that just transmit in the winter time, and they're just coming out of hiding at the moment, so it's getting quite busy.
From the middle of the road in Sacramento, eh? En draai zo wat aan Nederlandstalig laten, dat is wel mooi, ze doen dat. Dus luisteraars, luister maar zelf mee, dit is de radio piepzender. En I hope that my transmission good is. Here is music for you and your family.
Well, that one came out of hiding last night as we tuned the dial. I guess up in Preston, reception is a bit more hit and miss.
If you're fortunate enough to live on the east coast of England in the winter time, they can be heard 24 hours daily. My most interesting catch is perhaps one I've heard this week, which was just using 1 watt power. That was Radio Del Mara from the south of Holland. He was doing a special test on 1647 kilohertz, and I was amazed myself to hear him, and I made a tape of the reception and sent it to him, and got the, it was a letter of astonishment and a QSO card. Myself, I use a Sony ICF 2001D, which is connected to a rather large indoor loop antenna, which is about 1.5 meters square. And there's no amplification, but the signals are quite strong from the Dutch pirates.
If you want more information about this field of radio, just write to Derek Taylor, 12 Dolman Road, Preston, postal code PR2, 6AS in the UK. The phone number is 44 for the United Kingdom, 1772 492086. Once again, 441772 492086. No collect calls, please.
Well, talking of that part of the medium wave dial, we bring up the line now to Lou Josephs in Boston, USA. Because the last time we spoke to you, Lou, you said that because of a problem with the FCC, we wouldn't expect to see any stations using the extended part of the AM dial before March of next year. But now that story's changed.
Well, 687 other AM stations are awaiting the FCC's recalculation, but one of them, through a loophole in the law, a law passed in 1988, which changed the Communications Act of 1934, gives WJDM in Elizabeth, New Jersey, the permission to be a station on the expanded AM band before anybody else.
And when are they expected to appear there?
In a couple of weeks.
And what sort of power?
They'll be running 10 kilowatts during the daytime hour and 1 kilowatt at night.
You think it'll make it across the Atlantic?
It probably will, since there's hardly anything else on that particular frequency.
Except a few Dutch pirates, of course.
Other things that are developing are some things on the Internet that are proving to be quite fascinating. It's now who is going to be the provider of audio on the Internet. The progressive networks, those are the people that provide real audio, are offering to the first 100 people to visit their website a free beta testing of their latest personal server, which means that if you wanted to do your own pirate radio station from your house and put it up on the Internet, had you the bandwidth, you could do it.
But they have competition.
There's competition coming from Europe now in a package called FX27. There's competition coming from the people that came up with the Internet telephone, the Votech people. And, of course, there's also Zing Technologies, streaming technology.
Now, we've been listening to certainly the real audio, and, you know, quite frankly, if you listen to it, it sounds a bit like AM radio back in the 1920s. It's a bit compressed, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, and that's probably the biggest disadvantage of all these systems so far, is they are highly compressed in order to save bandwidth. The big difference with the Zing technology is that you can actually dial up and hear almost stereo quality, but it takes a lot of bandwidth, and the servers that are using it restrict you to maybe one or two people to be able to listen.
So we haven't really got to the broadcasting via the Internet yet.
No, but I think it's coming as soon as they can figure out how they can compress more things into the small bandwidth that you've got.
This is AM radio, where active minds get involved and interact.
Wouldn't it be nice if you could jump in the car in Amsterdam, tune in your favorite station, Radio Netherlands, of course, and listen to the same program while driving across Belgium, France, into southern Spain? Well, if the proponents of satellite-delivered digital audio broadcasting have their way, then we could have such a service in Europe by the end of the decade. Hans Bockhuizen is technical policy advisor to the Radio Netherlands management team. Is there any urgent need to push for satellite DAB?
Yes, by judging the preliminary results of the study Radio Netherlands is undertaking for the European Space Agency, the answer is yes, because we've had an overwhelming interest shown in the ESA Archimedes project for satellite radio to Europe. To this end, about 100 questionnaires were sent to a whole variety of broadcasters in Europe, ranging from regional commercial broadcasters all the way up to the major international broadcasters like the BBC and Deutsche Welle. And 30 responded by filling in the questionnaire, and amongst these 30 were 17 international broadcasters. This in itself shows the tremendous interest by international broadcasters in satellite radio. And we've had some preliminary conclusions so far. One is that, and this came really as a surprise, that the majority of the broadcasters are not going for CD quality radio, but for the digital equivalent of FM stereo. For an international broadcaster using shortwave, apparently CD is one bridge too far, maybe, and these organizations can very well live with FM stereo quality. Another interesting aspect was that there is interest shown in ancillary data services, but they don't have to be necessarily have to be interactive, state of the art. The majority of the broadcasters are showing interest in a kind of enhanced form of RDS-like systems, as we now have on many FM stations. And they think in terms of offering program-related data, weather information, traffic data, things like that. Simple, non-interactive applications.
Do international broadcasters also want to reach mobile receivers? Is that their main objective?
Yeah, that's part of the system offered by ESA, and this certainly is of interest also to international broadcasters. Another surprise which came out of the study is that there is also a tremendous interest shown in stationary reception. Systems like Astra, ADR, Astra Digital Radio, are of importance to international broadcasters.
What's so unique about the Archimedes project if you compare it to the Astra Digital Radio?
the fact that it offers both mobile, stationary, and portable reception. And of course, using Astra for radio, you still need that dish pointing towards the satellite. And using Archimedes in the future, just a small dish antenna the size of a CD will do, and there is no need to point it towards the satellite.
Hans, can we conclude that unless international broadcasters quickly claim the spectrum space around 1.5 gigahertz, it will be used for national and commercial services instead?
Yes, this is an aspect we didn't treat so far, but you're right. There is also the intention to start using this 1.5 gigahertz band, meant for satellite radio, also for terrestrial radio, specifically in Europe.
It's rather amusing to see all the press releases being launched at the moment connected with digital audio broadcasting. And just like Popov and Marconi 100 years ago, no one is really sure who's first to start DAB services. I think you could argue that until receivers are in the marketplace that you and I can buy at a reasonable price, any on-air services running now are simply experiments. The Dutch Nozema, the Netherlands broadcast transmitting company, is running a DAB service already and doing several tests with data casting, the transmission of text rather like worldwide web pages over the airwaves. With all this activity on the ground, how hopeful are we that satellite DAB will not be overshadowed? Gordon Harold of Brendan Associates has also been part of the ESA study.
I think it will happen. It's going to be a watershed in broadcasting for the future. And I think that satellite DAB is in fact going to ride on the back of terrestrial DAB, which of course is hitting the headlines at the moment, with launches in the UK, Sweden and Germany.
But it's almost essential for the international broadcasters because terrestrial DAB at the moment doesn't get much further than the horizon.
Oh, you're absolutely right. But my reference to terrestrial DAB, of course, is that it's the same basic technology. It's merely translated into delivery via satellite. And I think compatibility, consistency, same technology, all of this is terribly important.
The European Space Agency knows that in higher latitudes it will be much harder to get strong signals into build-up areas if you beam signals down from satellites in a geostationary orbit, namely positioned above the equator.
So the ESA Archimedes project is proposing to build satellites that orbit the Earth in a highly elliptical orbit, and this reduces the required transmitter power. In fact, the distance between satellite and receiver is much shorter this way. The project's being developed in Europe, but such a system would be able to provide satellite-delivered radio to Europe, the Far East and Canada. Kevin Galligan of the European Space Agency's Technology Centre in Noordwijk on the Dutch North Sea coast is also optimistic that you can drive across the continent in the future taking the same station with you.
Well, that's going to happen. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen probably towards the end of the decade, 99. The year 2000, that's a realistic date in which we can expect to have satellites for this, and this would enable you indeed to go from Hilversum to the south of France or to the west of Ireland and listen to the same radio program in your car. Terrestrial broadcasting is probably going to follow a somewhat national career path, if that's the right word. Satellite is going to have a more international flavour. It's going to have world service broadcasters present, not just the British, but all the world service broadcasters. But it's also going to have pan-national broadcasters, people who are traditionally in pan-national broadcasting, such as Europe One, CLT, and people like them. And we also believe there will be new services developed which are take advantage of the satellite functionality, which is inherently greater than national.
And in terms of delivery, I mean, it means to say that you're going to have two car radios, or will everything be combined into one box?
A combined radio is perfectly feasible. And in fact, you know, certainly I think your listeners are not interested in having two car radios. They want one box which does everything, including receives medium wave, long wave, short wave and FM, as well as the new digital radio. So one box for terrestrial, for satellite and for the old sorts of radio as well.
For how much?
Well, that's a delicate matter, and depends on manufacturers, it depends on their entry price philosophy, it depends whether they want to get rich quick or whether they want to stay in it for the long term. But we are convinced that a radio can be made and sold for around 300 EQs, and I'm not sure how to convert that into florins.
Well, it works out at around 600 guilders, or $350.
Geostationary satellites have severe disadvantages because they're down towards the horizon. We're proposing a concept or a satellite constellation which will overcome this and will in fact put the satellites right above your head at a high elevation angle, different from the geostationary approach, a little bit more radical, but certainly highly advantageous in terms of satellite power, and satellite power is what you pay for, essentially. It's cost, so much lower cost. And in fact, for Middle Europe, which is perhaps centred around Hilversum, the geostationary approach is not at all feasible.
But if you put them in a different orbit, you then need more than one satellite, don't you?
You need, in fact, for what we're talking about, six satellites. That means you have to build and launch six satellites. These six satellites, in fact, only are used for a short period. So you could argue, in fact, that the system is even more resilient than a geostationary satellite, where if you have one satellite and it fails, you've lost 24 hours of service. If you lose one satellite, although it's not the sort of thing that broadcasters like to contemplate, if you did lose one satellite, you lose 4 hours of service out of the 24.
A conference has just taken place in Hilversum with over 20 public service and commercial international broadcasters in attendance. The presentations all look plausible. But how certain can we be that the proposals will ever be realized?
We'll have the answer to that question in about 10 months from now, because from now on DASA, Daimler-Benz, will develop the business plan together with 9 or 10 other companies. If they manage to come up with a viable business plan, from there on the financing of the project will start. ESA itself will take care of about 40% of the financing needed for the first three satellites. And if the beginning is okay with the business plan, then the ball starts rolling and we'll have the launch of the first three satellites towards the end of 1998.
And receivers are already on the market?
And the whole project is riding on Eureka 147 digital audio broadcasting, which was or is aiming at offering terrestrial digital audio broadcasting, but in principle the same receivers can be used, so the receivers are there.
Hans Backhuizen. Back to Earth and to some developments concerning Veronica News Radio, which started full programming on 1395 kHz last Monday, October 16th. Joop Daalmeijer, Managing Director Technical Affairs and Radio for the Holland Media Group, explained to Media Network how they've solved a mutual interference problem with Radio Tirana in Albania.
We bought a new transmitter in the United States, a Harris transmitter, 120 kilowatts. Since last Monday it's on the air, only with 50 kilowatts. The solution with the interference with Albania, and they're transmitting in, I think, megawatt or something right there, is that we're using channel management now. So we will stop for 3 hours, and then they will come on, and they will switch over their transmitters late in the night. So there will be no interference in the morning programs from 6 a.m. till 9 a.m. Local Dutch time. It's a very bad solution, of course, but because we will be switched off for 3 hours. That's why we're looking for new frequency. And we found a couple of solutions, let's say 702, 720 kilohertz, frequencies not used in the region. We have lengthy discussions with Germans, with British people and in Austria to see if we can use their frequencies. They no longer occupy. But you have to come up with a conclusion in Geneva, and it will take another, let's say, 2-3 months. But then the problem has to be solved.
The Dutch commercial broadcaster Veronica has also done a deal with Germany's external broadcaster Deutsche Welle. In return for supplying a correspondent in Cologne, Veronica will rebroadcast the daily 30-minute program in Dutch from Deutsche Welle at 18 hours UTC. Veronica says they are talking with Radio Vlaanderen Internationaal in the hope of a similar deal. Time to bring up the line to Mike Bird in Melbourne, Australia for the propagation review. Mike, what's it been like over the last 7 days?
Diana, we experienced 2 solar flares last week and the solar flux levels increased. On Thursday the 12th, we witnessed an M1 solar flare at 6:05 UTC, and then on Friday, we witnessed an M4 flare at 5:04 UTC. The cause was sunspot region 7912. The solar flux ranged between 92 and 83. The average works out to 87.1, which equals an effective sunspot number of 30, and that is up 20 points on the previous week's level. The geomagnetic field disturbance indicator, the estimated planetary A index, ranged between 25 and 6, which represents active to quiet conditions. The magnetic field was active on Thursday the 12th due to a coronal hole. From Friday through to Monday, the magnetic field was quiet to unsettled. Tuesday saw it become unsettled to active, and it's thought that the 2 flares on Thursday and Friday were the culprit.
And what about between now and next Thursday, October 26th?
IPS Radio and Space Services expect solar activity will be low. The geomagnetic field should be generally active today and tomorrow due to a new small coronal hole appearing on the sun. Hopefully from Saturday, the remainder of the week should see quiet to unsettled conditions prevail.
Thanks, Mike. And that's all for this week. On behalf of the team around the world and of Jonathan and myself, have a pleasant weekend.
Media Network is a Radio Netherlands presentation. Copyright 1995.